Welcome to an episode of Capital Connection. We're glad to have you. As always, I am your host, Matt Calder, and hopefully after this show, you'll feel a little more connected to your capital. If you are a returning listener who maybe hasn't been here in a couple weeks, you're wondering why you're listening to Capital Connection and why you're not listening to What Matters in North Carolina. Of course, we changed over our name to Capital Connection to go in line with another product of our parent organization, the Civitas Institute, which is nccapitalconnection.com, which I also happen to write for. So it's just kind of bringing together the two things that I do under one roof, under one banner, which is Capital Connection. Glad we got that out of the way. In a couple more episodes, maybe I won't have to be mentioning, or maybe I don't have to mention it now, because maybe you're all already caught up and caught on to this. But until then, I'll kind of give it a quick mention at the beginning. Now, however you're listening to the show, we are glad to have you. If you are listening on the radio terrestrially on one of the stations we play on the weekends, one of the five stations we're playing on every weekend, then we thank you. But there's another way you can get the show and not have to sit down at the radio at that certain time. And to do that, you have a couple of options. You have my favorite option, which is the subscription option, where you just go ahead and subscribe to the show by going into your phone or your device, whether it's a tablet, your computer, and you go to, let's say you're an iPhone user. You go to Apple Podcasts, you search for Capital Connection. Let's say you're an Android user. You download a podcasting app. There's plenty of options. I like Podcast Addict. But you go there and you just download that app and you search for Capital Connection. You subscribe to the show and then you get it to your device automatically. You don't have to worry about it. I get Capital Connection on my phone automatically if I want to listen to the show again after I already talk on the show, experience the show, cut together the show and produce it and put it out. If I am so inclined, I can listen to it again on my phone with a couple presses of a button. And also you can too. And that's the easiest way to get the show. But the only issue with going just to the app is that you'll only hear and have available the last couple weeks or so of shows, and you won't be able to look back further and listen to the wealth of shows we have built up over the last couple of years of What Matters in North Carolina and Capital Connection together. And to do that, though, you can just go to freedomactionnetwork.com, and that's where all of those shows are. All of those episodes are available on there going back for months, going back for a couple of years on freedomactionnetwork.com. So that's the easiest way and really the only way to find out about all these past episodes. Now, on to social media. If you've been around, I've been pushing our social media for What Matters in North Carolina, and that's kind of going away now and going to be, we're merging together what we can of NC Capital Connection social media and What Matters in North Carolina social media, but we're bringing them together under NC CapCon. That's NCCAPCONN, NC CapCon, or on Facebook, search Capital Connection or NC Capital Connection, and you'll see the logo, and you will be able to follow along. You can like our Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter. If you're following us on Twitter, it'd be a little different than if you were following along before, because you'll be getting all those updates on news stories on NC Capital Connection about what's going on in the state legislature and other government issues. You'll be getting live updates from meetings such as the House School Safety Committee meeting. There was some live tweeting going on from that meeting from NC CapCon. And also on this show, we'll be talking with Representative John Torbett, who was in that meeting, who is the chairman of that committee, and sort of getting the story written on it and then taking that with talking to the chairman of the committee himself, or one of the co-chairmen of the committee, Representative David Lewis, of course. Which really, that kind of rolls me into our segment for today, our first segment for today. And that is with Representative John Torbett. He's from Gaston County. And he will be talking about the House School Safety Committee meeting. We'll be talking with him about the House Select Committee on School Safety and sort of what happened in that two-part meeting that lasted the better part of the day this past Wednesday. Then we will talk with Brooke Medina of the Civitas Institute, and we'll be talking with her about the upcoming Conservative Leadership Conference that is being hosted by the Civitas Institute, and also she has an announcement for our listeners on the show only, and this is that there is a radio-specific, listener-specific for the Capital Connection show code, promo code, to be used when signing up to get 20% off. So this show is sponsored by the Civitas Institute. It's a product of the Civitas Institute. And now they're offering to Capital Connection listeners a 20% off code, which is RADIO, R-A-D-I-O, all in capital letters, is the promo code to get 20% off of a Conservative Leadership Conference package. It can be a Friday night ticket. It can be Friday and Saturday, VIP Friday and Saturday. It can be the whole package deal. There's a 20% off coupon for that available. It is RADIO is the promo code, and you can do it at civitasclc.org. That is CIVITASCLC.org. And you can go there and get that deal. And with early bird pricing having come to an end, you definitely want to use that promo code if you are going to go to the Conservative Leadership Conference. So without any further ado, we'll get to our segment with Representative John Torbett. Representative Torbett, thanks for joining us back on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
So you're coming off yesterday. You know, this show will go out over the weekend in the beginning of next week, but we're talking the day after the first meeting of the House Select Committee on School Safety. And you and Representative David Lewis chair this committee together, and it's a big committee, right? I mean, what's the membership of this committee? How many people?
I think we added another one yesterday. I think we're at 50 right now, which is just shy of the second committee. I think the only larger committee is the full Appropriations Committee.
Right, and I mean that's a big issue that they're working around breaking up the entire state budget. But so, I mean, I kind of want to touch on that. There was a question about why there's not a Senate involvement in this committee, and you answered it yesterday in the work session. Or the first session of the committee, that is just too large. There's just too many people involved on the House side right now for it to be a joint committee. I mean, this is, you know, 50 people on the committee out of the entire House is not an insignificant portion of the House by any means.
Correct.
And so yesterday, the meeting was broken up into two sessions about. The first session, just getting information to the legislators and also to the people, you know, viewing to the people in the committee who were there, to the stakeholders, but just getting that information out. And then the second session was more about kind of discussing around some of the things that were learned in the morning. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And then the general people's views and thoughts, because, you know, the committee's been formed for a couple of weeks, and I'm sure, just like all of us, that members of the committee had, you know, well, maybe if we did this, it would help, or maybe if we did that, it would help. So I spoke with Rep. Lewis, and he agreed, let's have the second part of the committee just open and hearing from the members of the committee about their ideas and thoughts. So.
Right, and I definitely want to get to those, but let's kind of start off with what, in the first session, in the informational session, what were the things that really jumped out to you? What were the things that you maybe thought you knew the case and it turned out to be a little different, or something just completely took you by surprise that you didn't foresee?
Well, one thing that, you know, with the terrible event that happened in Florida, you know, and that's just one of several over the last several years, is that our concern was, what were we doing for schools? And I was extremely pleased to hear the things that are going on that everybody just doesn't know or doesn't follow on day to day, as far as securing our schools and properties, that, you know, school administrators and LEAs across the state, without us having to say anything, that they are actively pursuing technological advancements in security and situational awareness and security on a day-to-day fashion. So I was very heartened to hear all the efforts that go into that are currently going on, that I honestly didn't understand until yesterday. So.
Right, and that was sort of my takeaway from it in a way as well, is that from the way the speakers were talking, you could tell this wasn't something they started thinking about 3 weeks ago. This wasn't something that just came out of, you know, came onto their desk 3 weeks ago. This is something that has been going on for a while, has been in their mind for a while. The one that jumped out to me sort of was from the State Bureau of Investigation talking about how their responsibility, their niche in this overall plan of preparedness was on the prevention side, on getting getting to possible or would-be shooters before they would carry out that act. And I think that is an area that needs so much focus in all of this, and is frankly an area where the Federal Bureau of Investigation dropped the ball in Florida. I mean, there's a well documented now the missteps and mistakes that happened leading up to the Florida shooting, where it could have possibly been prevented. Versus, you know, now, so the State Bureau of Investigation, our North Carolina, you know, bureau, is focusing on that aspect, and I think that is a really good place for them to focus.
I agree, and excuse me. I think what we're I was actually by hearing all the things that are going on, we the committee, we want to be there to add aid and assistance or enforce some of the technologies that are being, and just understand, are there any shortfalls or shortcomings? Is there anything we can do as elected positions in the state of North Carolina to support the safety and security of our people, which is job number one? Is there anything that we can step up and better aid and assist in that effort? And I think we also heard some of that yesterday. I'm real big on peer-to-peer. I think we need to look into programs that involve kids talking to other kids and helping and support and that type of thing. And then more perhaps in-school professionals such as child psychologists or something. Additional SROs, you know, we've all heard that. So there are some things that I think we legitimately need to look at and see, can we go ahead and get these implemented? If so, when? And if so, how? And that's some of the things we'll be doing in our breakout or our subcommittee work, because the overall, the issue is so complex, we feel like we need to break into subcommittees or subcategories based off the big categories, such as facility safety, mental health, that type of thing.
Right, and that's the thing you're talking about, the additional school resource officers. And we saw in Maryland an attempted school shooting that happened, and the school resource officer stopped the shooting with no deaths. So, I mean, if that right there, and I don't think it's getting a whole lot of attention nationally in some areas. There's a couple national stories on it, but overall, I mean, it was kind of the nothing happened. Not that nothing happened, but a tragedy was averted and it's less focused on, but that is sort of a check mark for why the school resource officers are a valuable thing to have.
Right. Right. You're exactly right. And it's unfortunate, at least in my personal opinion, it's unfortunate that more often than not, the media will pretty much highlight and pinpoint the sheer tragedies in our day-to-day lives and not really highlight and pinpoint the wonderful positives that go on. So, you know, in a world, perfect world, I wish there was more of a balance there.
Right. And I'm thinking back on the presentation from the North Carolina Center for Safer Schools, which I believe was formed following Sandy Hook, if I'm correct.
That's correct. That was formed by an executive order from former Governor Pat McCrory back in 2013. And they have been collecting data, and we will, as yesterday, be receiving some of that collected data as they have been, you know, pretty much boots on the ground since 2013.
Right, and they're highlighting the need for the school resource officers. They're highlighting the need for the state agencies and other agencies to just work together to share this information. I mean, they're saying that there needs to be better communication between the students and the schools, opening up those lines of communication so people, adults, can know of these problems and possible problems. I mean, these are three things that you can point to very concretely that could have helped in the tragedy in Florida, honestly.
That's correct.
They had problems with their SROs that they did have, that they weren't acting. So they were the wrong people for the job. But we've seen in Maryland that the right person for the job can be effective in that problem. We see that if there had been that collaboration among the agencies, if there had been good communication, maybe those those warnings would have made it to the right people. If there had been, you know, a better way for the students who saw these problems to maybe go to their school personnel and then take that information to the right place, maybe something would have happened there. I mean, it's
correct.
They've highlighted a lot of.
But you remember being young. You remember being young in high school, and back in my day it was called junior high, but now it's middle school. That, you know, the person I'm most associated with wasn't the adult, wasn't the teacher. It was my peer. It was my friend, my buddy, my pal. And I think we need to work inside of that process also with adult, you know, supervision, of course, but to embolden that peer-to-peer communication. And I think you've seen some of that reaction as the terrible event happened in Florida with those students coming out and saying, you know, enough is enough. I think that in a positive way can do great improvements in the safety and security just from peer to peer, because that's who I listened to when I was in high school. And I assume that folks like in high school and middle school, they listen more to their peers than they do, you know, adults or moms and dads. Now, nobody messes with grandma or grandpa, I'll grant you that. But, you know, moms and dads, you know, I didn't listen a whole lot to my moms and dad until I turned to the age of a young adult. And I think that's just commonplace. So I really want to focus on the peer-to-peer, adding redundancy in SROs. You know, maybe we'll get down so they're in high schools there's two or more. Maybe in middle schools there's two. Elementary schools there's one. We don't know, but all this will be, you know, pretty much dissected as we move forward.
Right, and I definitely agree with that peer-to-peer. I mean, I think back and you know, high school wasn't too terribly long ago for me, but I was, you know, 10 years ago I was in high school, and I didn't care what the teachers had to say. I didn't care what the principals had to say so much as you care about what your peer group has to say and what they think. And,
right.
And I think the positive side of that is that if people are talking and there's a community and people recognize that there is a, you know, a downside to ostracizing certain people and to, you know, taking things too far. If people recognize that they're
right.
That they can, you know, be detrimental to mental health of their peers, that can be a positive thing or a negative thing depending on the awareness that people have. And I think that's one
right.
Small
I think that's
part.
Where we yeah, that's where we need the adults to jump in and cultivate that you're not in there you know, telling on someone, for example. You're in there providing help and assistance to get that individual some help and pull them out from whatever dark confines their minds may be in. So that's where I think the whole shift of that peer to peer with positive outcomes can reap great benefits.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think that the place where it has sort of been happening is on the suicide side. On the suicide mm-hmm. prevention side, it's become in more recent years more acceptable and normal to say, okay, it's okay to talk to an adult. You don't want to be a snitch, you don't want to be the rat, but when it comes to saving someone's life from themselves, you know, if you think someone's a suicide risk, it's become more normal to go ahead and go to a trusted adult, especially if it's a school psychologist or someone who can be a first line of defense against that. It's become more normal.
Right.
And if we can normalize that for these other situations, which I think a big part of that is getting a handle on who are the at-risk groups for carrying out these attacks. But if we
right.
if we can normalize that, we'll be taking a positive step, I think.
Right, and that number, suicide number, is way too large a number that we can aggressively go in there and change. Some of the reasons, you know, we have to let these folks know that, you know, breaking up with a boyfriend or girlfriend is not a life-ending event. It's just part of life. We have to earlier determine who's a bully, that type of thing, and get those people help. All that is, I don't mean to say it's easy, but it's easily detected, and that's something we just need to put additional effort on. So.
Right, and I mean, and I'm not so far removed that I remember that things seemed like a situation you could never get out of and would never be all right. Let's say you screw up a big project and your grade is down for that class. Worst case scenario, if you fail that class, you can do it again. I mean, it's not It's not the end of your life. It's not. But in that moment, it really seems like it. And I just wish there, and maybe it's a wish, maybe there's a way to just give some perspective to these young people, these kids, to say, this isn't the worst thing that can happen. This is okay. This is very, very doable. And if, I mean, that's, I know it's a hard question because I've been on that side, but it's incredibly important to look for that way, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where I think your peer-to-peer can play the biggest role or at least have that biggest impact.
Oh, definitely. Your parent telling you things are going to be okay, even though they have the experience and age to know that's true, doesn't hold as much weight as your buddy saying, hey, it's all right. You'll be fine.
That's right.
It doesn't make sense, but it does make sense.
Yep.
So that's sort of the mental health side there. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
I was going to say that's correct. The mental health there. And I think that expanding mental health people available to students would be an important thing. I mean, myself, my parents divorced when I was going from elementary to middle school was when my parents' divorce happened. And they had my brother and I go talk to a school psychologist who was available just as a precautionary, you know, there wasn't that there were behavior problems or there were these issues, but they wanted us to have a place to kind of work through and process that. And I, at the time, I didn't want to do it at first. I mean, of course, like there was a stigma. I didn't want to leave class and have all my buddies know I was leaving class for something, but in hindsight, it was a very positive thing. And I think expanding that would be as well a positive thing.
Right. You're exactly right.
So I'm glad that the conversation isn't just about keeping guns out of schools or maybe increased gun control. I'm glad that that's not where the conversation is wholly focused, even though I know a lot of people.
No, we got to jump in front. We have to jump in front of the guns. And it's humans. That's the state of the mind. That's where we've got to try to, I guess, put our focus on, at least in my opinion.
Right, and that's the concern. I mean, I have people who know I'm dealing with this as a story and tracking it, and they're saying, are they focusing just on the guns, or is there, you know, good representation in the committee for the Second Amendment for people who are supportive of the Second Amendment? And that's the question I keep getting, is that people are worried that this is just going to end up being, how can we use gun control to affect change in this situation?
Right. I can say guns were not brought up for any of the meeting yesterday till the very end, when one of the members, I think Elmer Floyd, brought up the issue about teachers and guns. So it wasn't mentioned any during the day until the very end of the meeting. And to me, that was a blessing. That was a welcome response, because I do believe that guns not the cure-all. It's the mental state of the individuals. And if we can aid and assist them, help them as fellow citizens, as you know, fellow humans, if you would, then we can divert a lot of this mental health and help hopefully correct the long-term issues.
And it, from what you're saying, it sounds like a lot of what you're saying boils down to just connection between people, and that lack of connection being a very large contributing factor to what has somebody turn to becoming a school shooter or carrying out some other sort of act of violence. I mean, whether it's violence against himself as a suicide or others, it's that lack of connection. So that's what you seem to keep circling back to.
That's correct.
And then
we have to keep the lines of communication open as fellow humans, if you would. So.
And then, so I do want to touch on the issue of arming teachers. Where did that discussion sort of go once it was broached?
I think Representative Floyd brought up the fact that was there going to be any discussion, and I didn't hear anybody really come up with any additional comments, so that topic just kind of died and went away, and then the meeting was brought to a close.
Okay, and then I wanted to talk a little about the issue of the Speak Up NC app. That seems like an interesting idea. So can you tell me a little more about that?
About the app?
Yes.
Yes, yes. It's actually here once again. It's a communication device with an apparatus that most of us use on a day to day, being our smartphones. The first thing we'll have to do is make sure schools allow kids to have their smartphones. If not, the app doesn't do anybody any good. That's my biggest concern. And there are a lot of schools out there that don't provide access to your smartphone during the school process because it's currently a distraction. So we'll have to cross that bridge. But it's actually just providing an app or a software development system where people can ping security or alert someone in authority that something's going on, whether it's someone talking about suicide, someone talking about using weapons, odd behavior, you know, anything along those lines. It's just a signal point for a kid to, for most cases, anonymously say something's going on. So it's a welcome piece of software, developmental tool, and it's being used throughout places in the United States, and I'm sure it's one. I call them gadgets or gizmos, if you would. I'm old school, but it's one of those gadgets that we'll be looking at as the community moves forward. Is that applicable to schools in North Carolina? Some schools, I think, are already using it. Some schools are already testing, and I do want to at least alert folks out there that, you know, schools are moving forward each and every day with securing our kids. So this isn't something that they're waiting for the General Assembly to do. They are actively and aggressively making sure that the kids in their confines are protected and are safe. So give them kudos each and every day. We're just going to be there to hopefully aid and assist.
Right, and I've got the statistics on the tip on the app in front of me from the meeting. And so yes, 42 schools are participating in 5 counties, and the statistics for 2015 to 2016, for that time period of a year, is 132 verified incidents were sent in to this line. There were 81 calls received to Speak Up NC from their suicide lifeline, and the largest group of what these incidents were about were bullying at 39%, and that's a big part of the framework for what goes into a shooter. So 5% of these incidents weapons related, but 39% were bullying, 25% were about danger, 24% are about drugs. And those three categories go into this, you know, issue that we're all trying to prevent.
So that's correct.
It seems like it's being utilized. And as far as the phone use in schools, I know my mom is a teacher, and she's a technology teacher, and they're integrating even in the elementary school, they're integrating tablets and some phone use into lessons. And I know in high school, my stepsisters, they're using their phones in classes as a learning tool. And if this is happening in Johnston County, I got to expect it's happening in a bunch of other places in the state too. I don't think of Johnson County as being on the leading edge of technology very often.
Unless you're in Johnson County.
Oh, and I am, and I love being in Johnson County. But
So I'm sure they are doing yeoman's work down there. So.
Oh yeah. And really, I mean, so I guess what still stands out to you that we haven't got to from the meeting? What kind of sticks out in your mind?
We didn't do a whole lot with security of facilities yesterday. I look at that probably coming up in a more distant future, future architectural designs of schools to provide more safety security. Now, that's not, I want to again say that is currently being looked at, but what are we learning learning from recent events that we might need to address in future architectural schematics of schools as we build out for the future? Like I've told everybody I've talked to about this, and which is hundreds of folks, is that, You know, my concern is that I know tomorrow if we had to, we could absolutely 100% secure every facility out there in every school. But do we want our schools to look like federal prisons or military installations? I don't think we do yet. So we need to take precautions we can from the facilities side to look at what can be done unobtrusive but still provide safety and security for our kids. And by the way, also I want to give a kudos out to there. We have received emails of thoughts and suggestions and ideas and concepts from literally, I would say it's up in the thousands now through emails and phone calls. And I appreciate each and every one of them. It's going to take all of us to solve this. And by hearing from people's emails and we're picking on that, and not one of them has gone unread, and all of those are being entered in and combined, if you would, to be topics for discussion inside of this committee. So thanks to all the folks out there.
Right. And that's definitely, it's great to see all that involvement coming from the outside. And touching on the securing schools, that one I see as being a really big problem to chew, because you have new school construction can be affected pretty well by this idea of centralizing the schools, keeping them it's down to one large building or as best as you can, and controlling access points. Those can be done. But then I think back about like the school I went to, Clayton High School, is a very old school. It has several disconnected buildings where you go in between, you know, to go to different classes, right, and go to outbuildings. And securing something like that, you can't secure the building itself because people have to move in between them freely. So you're limited in a way. You have to, you know, you would have to look at securing access points, which would lead to armed guards and that whole issue you're trying to avoid of having, you know, giant right. fences, concertina wire, and armed guards at every entrance. So you have right. to, in new construction, I see it as being an easier problem to work on. I think about the newer high schools in the county are much more centralized versus the one I went to. And it's just a bear of a problem.
Yes, sir, you're correct.
But it's good to know that there's, you know, 50 legislators and thousands of people in North Carolina looking at it and working the problem.
It is, and it's a welcome process. It's literally taking all. I'm getting letters and emails from. I'll go back to the gadgets and gizmos, for example, for technological applications to schools. There's a ton of that stuff coming in, and at some point in time, we'll probably start hearing from those people that want to test or trial or bring something forward that's worked somewhere else, that type of application. So, you know, we want to give everyone the opportunity out there. So,
all right. And thank you for coming on the show. I think we got to cut this segment off, but we definitely appreciate you coming back on the show.
Hey, you call me anytime. We'll try to keep you abreast of what's as we move forward. So thank you for the offer.
Sounds good. Thank you. All right, Brooke, thanks for coming back on the show to kind of give us an update on CLC.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Matt.
And of course, if you people have heard the segments with you before, they know that CLC is the Conservative Leadership Conference coming up, and you can kind of give us the details about what's going on there.
Yep, so it is going to be on tax weekend, so we did that so you guys would not forget, April 13th and 14th, and it is going to be at the Raleigh Marriott Crabtree Valley, which is an incredible hotel that's recently been renovated. So it's beautiful on the inside. The food is excellent. There's a great bar on the outside. There's a good location on the patio area to just hang out. So beautiful venue, excellent lineup, and it's just a few weeks away.
Right. I mean, that's kind of sneaking up. It's a little different date than years past, a little different time frame, kind of doing it earlier in the year, right?
Right. Last year it was in June. So this year it is a little bit earlier. And we think it's the perfect time. Most people are not out of town traveling with their families for summer. And, you know, we've been able to secure some great speakers that we may have not been able to get during the summertime. So, again, it's April 13th and 14th. And we're going to cover this a little bit more in this segment. But if you go to civitasclc.org, that's going to give you all the all the details of each and every speaker and the schedule.
Right, and that way they can kind of hopefully have their taxes taken care of ahead of time and not be struggling on the weekend to get them in. And they'll be done and be able to go and just kind of enjoy this conference for a couple days and not be scrambling around.
I hope that for myself as well. I have yet to do my taxes, but yes. Yeah, so you listeners out there who intend to come, let's make a pact that we're going to get our taxes done beforehand and make sure that we are able to fully engage and fully enjoy at CLC, because you won't want to be thinking about taxes while you're having a great time listening to all of our amazing speakers, interacting with fellow conservatives throughout the state, going to our great vendor fair, eating good food. It's just going to be an all-around great time. So, yeah, get the taxes out of the way beforehand.
See, I'm in a different boat this year. Usually I'm the last-minute person, but this time I actually got my taxes done over a month ago now.
Oh, good for you.
I know.
Hats off.
It was the week I got all my paperwork, went and got it done.
See, we were waiting. My husband and I were waiting for our paperwork to come in for a little while, and then it just kind of fell off the radar. We've had a crazy couple of months, and if you've got several like life changes that happened in 2017 that affect your taxes, which was the case for us, oh my goodness, it's just thinking about trying to tackle that on our own, because we typically do our own taxes, just sounds daunting. So I have ignored it far too long, but I think I'm just going to grab myself a really good glass of sangria or maybe some Reese's peanut butter cups, which happen to be my favorite chocolate, and just, you know, force myself to sit down and take care of it.
Well, there you go. We went to get them prepared. My wife and I, we did the same thing last year, and it was a new thing for me having someone else do them, but it's really, really easy. You just show up with the right stuff, hand it over, answer a couple questions.
But you have to pay them. Yeah, I don't like that idea.
I just take it out of the return and I'm good to go. And I never have to directly pay them. And it works okay for me.
But I'm glad it works for you.
back to why we're here. So we're talking about CLC. And I think there's been a couple of speakers announced since the last time you came on.
Yes. So if you're not following us on Facebook, you may not realize that that is where we've been announcing several of our speakers. We've also been doing it via our mailing list. And so if you go to nccivitas.org, you can get on our newsletter list as well as our other weekly, sometimes biweekly emails, or go to Civitas's Facebook page, which is, if you just type in the search engine Civitas Institute, you will find us and like us there on Facebook, and you'll be able to keep up with all these new CLC changes and announcements. But yeah, our most recent speaker that we've announced is former Senator Jim DeMint, who also used to be the president of the Heritage Foundation, and now he is the leader of the Convention of the States, which I know many of us are very excited about learning more about. Some of us have already been following a little bit about what the Convention of the States is, but Mr. DeMint is going to be just breaking it down for us, showing us North Carolina conservative leaders why the Convention of the States should matter to us, why we should be engaged in advocating for it, etc. So it's going to be really good. I can't wait to hear him speak.
Right, and I've done some stuff with Convention of the States before in the past, keeping up with kind of where they're going, trying to get some support. It's been a long time coming. Convention of the States, I guess it wouldn't hurt to kind of give a quick rundown of what it is for people, is the idea that we could call a constitutional convention of the states. It's kind of self-explanatory once you get into it, and make some changes to the federal governments that would be directed by the states and controlled by the states as opposed to the federal government, like amendments to the Constitution. But anyway.
Right. So it's a reassertion of federalism, which is how our nation was and is structured. But if you've been aware of politics at all within the past several decades, ever since the 1930s, you will realize that we have moved further and further away from federalism to, you know, bigger government control at the federal level. So definitely something worth listening to at the very least, maybe even, you know, beginning to get involved with at the most. So definitely something that I'm looking forward to. And we're also, you know, we had already announced some of our big name keynote speakers, such as Dennis Prager, which I can't wait to hear him speak. He's in the middle of making a movie with Adam Carolla called No Safe Spaces, and I'm sure he'll be talking about that. And that, you know, refers to the college campus free speech debates that have been going on across colleges throughout the U.S., from Middlebury to Berkeley to you name it. I mean, it's everywhere because so many students feel like they need safe spaces. And so Dennis will be talking to us more about that rising call for safe spaces and the limits on free speech that certain college students and even their professors have been advocating for. And we should all be concerned about that. And so I think that Dennis will provide a well-rounded and expert view on what's actually going on these college campuses. So I can't wait to hear him speak on that.
Right. And I guess I wanted to get to it earlier, but it just kind of came back around to me. But so you're actually announcing, or not I guess announcing, but you're offering a promo code to Capital Connection listeners, right?
Yes. So it is exclusively for our listeners here at Capital Connection. And so if you go to civitasclc.org to purchase your tickets, you're going to want to use the promo code RADIO. You do that in all caps, RADIO, and you will get an extra 20% off of your ticket.
And that's, I mean, so the early bird pricing just kind of came to an end. So now the there's going to be this other discount coming
right
through for our radio listeners, for Capital Connection listeners. Again, that code is RADIO, R-A-D-I-O, all capital letters, and they get 20% off.
Yes, which is a great deal. And I don't know when prices are going to, you know, be that low again at this point. I mean, we're at around the 3-week mark before the conference, maybe a little bit less than that. And so your listeners are going to be able to access a special price that the rest of those that are just visiting the website will not have access to. So they don't want to miss out on that. And I'm sure they can call if they've got any questions or if there's any issues with that. But I also wanted to discuss a little bit, even outside of the speakers, just how exciting the schedule alone is for this conference and just the opportunities that it provides for conservatives across our state. And for example, Friday night, the festivities actually kick off a little bit before Dennis Prager hits the stage on Friday evening. And that's, we're going to have a general session, and right now it's in the works what exactly that general session is going to be. It is going to, I'm sure, be lively, whatever it ends up being. We've got a few different ideas in the works, but that will start around 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon. You'll want to refer to the conference schedule online for the actual times, though. But then we've got a VIP reception, and that is going to happen before the dinner as well. And so if you want to purchase VIP tickets, that's where you're going to actually get to meet Mr. Prager in person, take a photo with him, and just have some hors d'oeuvres, maybe a glass of wine before we actually go to dinner. So Friday alone is going to be a lot of fun. And, of course, our conference favorite in the past has been Lieutenant Governor Forrest, and he will be speaking Friday evening as well.
Right. So I know in the past there's been a couple different things that happened before the dinner, sometimes, or before the VIP in dinner session. Sometimes a movie screening, sometimes, I mean, is there any kind of indication what that time will be right now?
I will give you a few different options of what it may be. But like I said, we are not releasing exactly what it is yet for this year. But like you mentioned, last year, it was a movie screening. We have also had debates, panels on hot button issues. So it could be any number one of those things. We will release that information as soon as we've made the finalizations. We'll put it on our website for sure.
All right. And so then, of course, Saturday, there will be just a bunch of sessions of all kinds of topics to go through, as in years past, right?
Yes. So Saturday, full lineup. We're going to kick it off with our breakfast session, though, which you're not going to want to miss that. That's got a lot of our state leaders that are going to be speaking and updating us on things that are going on at the state level. So men such as Phil Berger, Senator Berger, our state treasurer, Dale Falwell, as well as House Speaker Tim Moore. So those are just a few of the ones that are scheduled to speak, as well as our new CEO and President, Donald Bryson. So that's going to be breakfast time. Also, an interesting session that we have not offered in the past, and it's going to be unique to this year, is our Toxic Agenda panel. And so if you follow Civitas on our website, we have been releasing several articles that are falling under what we're calling a toxic agenda campaign, which highlights what the left really wants in the state of North Carolina. So, for example, I wrote an article on abortion. We've written articles on light rail, free college tuition. We'll be having some other ones coming out this month and next month. And so these are just inside looks at bills and just words that have been spoken by progressives within leadership and government that really reveal their intentions as far as their long-term hopes for North Carolina. And so we're going to be doing a panel that really dissects those long-term intentions, because we think that all North Carolinians need to be aware of the different policies and agendas that are at work right now.
All right. And then, I mean, as far as more and more that is announced, it'll be available on the CLC website. And will you give us that website again?
Yes, it is civitasclc.org. And you don't want to miss that special radio promo code again. I can't emphasize that how good of a deal that is. So you're not going to want to pass that up.
And again, that promo code is radio, R-A-D-I-O, all caps. And give us the information on the conference, when and where, and one more time.
Yes, it's April 13th through 14th at the Raleigh Marriott Crabtree Valley, which is right across the street from Crabtree Valley Mall. And also, when you go to our website, civitasclc.org, you're going to be able to secure a hotel room at a discounted rate. And believe me, these are great rooms. You don't want to have to worry about driving home late on Friday night and coming back early Saturday morning. Just book a room, bring your spouse, hang out. You guys just make a little mini vacation out of it. And we look forward to seeing you then.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for coming on and giving us an update.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thank you, Representative Torbert, for coming on the show and talking with us about the House Select Committee on School Safety and what's kind of going on there and what will be going on going forward with that committee. Thank you to Brooke Medina for coming on the show and talking with us about the most recent developments for the Conservative Leadership Conference. We are definitely looking forward to being out there. Capital Connection will be there reporting on the conference and also interviewing a ton of people to get shows together for you to connect you to what's going on in your capital. And that's the state capital and also the nation's capital. We'll be talking with representatives to the U.S. Congress. We'll be talking with state officials. We'll be talking with all sorts of people at that conference, building up a log of these great shows to get out to you in the weeks following the Conservative Leadership Conference. We also want to thank you, the listeners, for being here with us through this transition from What Matters in North Carolina, What Matters in C, to Capital Connection. And we really hope that through listening to these shows, you do feel more connected to your capital, more connected to what's going on in Raleigh, in your state government, whether it's at the state controller's office, from the treasurer's office, to the governor's mansion, the legislature. We want to make sure you are connected to what is going on in your government, and not just on the state level, but also on the federal level as it affects North Carolinians. Because all of this that we're doing here is about connecting North Carolinians to their government. But again, we want you to be connected not just to your government, but connected to us. And to do that, what you can do is go on Facebook and Twitter and search NC CapCon. That's at NCCAPCONN, or search Capital Connection or NC Capital Connection, and you will find our social media. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter. And again, if you've been with the What Matters NC social media platforms in the past, you will have seen a couple of Capital Connection things, but mostly just the shows being pushed out there. If you're following on NC CapCon, you're going to get more of that up-to-date content. You're going to get all of the articles that we put out there. You're going to get all of the live tweeting from different committees, keeping you informed about what's going on in your capital. But again, thank you for being with us through the transition to Capital Connection, and we'll catch you next time.